good news from the front. The defenders of the Alamo are standing strong, bravely battling the forces of tyranny. Wait, didn't the Battle of the Alamo take place in 1836? And didn't the Alamo fall to Santa Anna's army, with Davy Crockett, Jim Bowie, John Wayne, and nearly every other defender being killed? Yes, but you history buffs, preservationists, and aficionados of the absurd will be glad to know that the battle continues in Texas today. One lone state senator has risen to redefend the Alamo, not from the Mexican government this time, but from the ferocious invading forces of the United Nations. Senator Donna Campbell, a Tea Party Republican from Pluto, startled even her far-right Republican colleagues by introducing a bill to ban any foreign ownership of the Alamo, warning darkly that it is in danger of falling to the UN. What spurred Senator Campbell to rush to the barricades was a news item that UNESCO, the UN's cultural division, is considering including the Alamo as a World Heritage Site. That would place it on a small and very prestigious list that includes the Statue of Liberty and the Grand Canyon. It's an honor, noted her colleagues, who also pointed out that the state owns the iconic structure and that the heritage designation doesn't alter that ownership at all. Moreover, they added, being a heritage site has proven to be a big boost to tourism and jobs. Another Republican observed that no Texas politico would even think of selling such a chunk of state history. I'm trying to figure out what problem we're trying to solve here, he said gently to her. But the learned senator had an answer for that. Anything that starts with the UN gives me cause for concern. This is Jim Hightower saying, those who say the state leaders offer the best models for good government never met Senator Campbell.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Now on KPFT Local News at 4.
A new scathing report points at a major wage and job disparity when it comes to one ethnic group in Texas. We'll tell you how it's impacted in a live report.
KPFT Local News at 4 starts now.
Good afternoon and welcome to KPFT Local News at 4 p.m. It's Friday, March 6, 2015. I'm Lane Closure.
And I'm Gerry van Bakel in for Marlo Blue. Thank you for joining us.
And in the news this afternoon, a new report indicates racial disparities in wage and jobs in Texas continue at an alarming rate. Although the economy is adding jobs, the unemployment rate among blacks is 9.5% more than double than white employment, and wages for black workers in Texas has fallen since the year 2000.
Joining us now live by phone to talk more about this report, its findings, and what it all means is Center for Popular Democracy spokesperson Sean Sebastian. Mr. Sebastian, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, can you give us more details about the wage and job disparity among blacks here in Texas?
Yeah, I think you both described it, the situation well. In Texas, the white unemployment rate is 3.7%, but the black unemployment rate is 9.5%. So while there may be an economic recovery in some sectors, black community members are being left out of that economic recovery, so much so that since 2000, their wages have actually gone down by almost 1%. They have not seen wage growth at all.
Mr. Sebastian, what are the reasons for this disparity?
So historically, the black unemployment rate has generally been double the national aggregate unemployment rate across the country. So these trends are true in Texas and across the United States in different regions of different levels of severity. When unemployment is high, these racial disparities are even higher. When unemployment is low, these racial disparities shrink. So there are a couple different reasons for that. One is that when unemployment is low, the labor market is tighter. So employers looking for new job applicants don't have the luxury of discriminating. They have to pick the person who's most qualified for the job, regardless of what they look like or where they come from. When there's a long line of applicants, because unemployment is high, they can pick and choose among a lot of different candidates, and generally, black workers are chosen last.
And can you tell me, how did researchers arrive at the number cited in the report?
So the researchers used the current population survey, which is data put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census. They compiled the data highlighted the racial disparities by state and the Federal Reserve region.
Okay, does this report make recommendations on ways to fix this?
Yes, it does, actually. So the report is titled Wall Street, Main Street, and Martin Luther King Boulevard, Why African Americans Must Not Be Left Out of the Federal Reserve's Full Employment Mandate. Now, the Federal Reserve has a mandate to both keep prices stable and to achieve full employment. This report is geared towards the Federal Reserve, asking them, calling on them to keep interest rates low until all communities, including black communities, experience an economic recovery. Right now, there's a debate going on within the Federal Reserve, and many are saying that there is an economic recovery that justifies raising interest rates and putting the brakes on the economy. This report strongly recommend that would be disastrous for black communities. Interest rates have to stay low, the labor unemployment needs to drop further, and the labor market needs to tighten until black communities experience a drop in unemployment and actual hourly wage gains.
Okay, now we understand a coalition of groups are actually calling for action on this. So what specifically are they asking for?
So there's a coalition of groups that had a national day of action yesterday in eight different cities, from San Francisco to New York and Philadelphia, from Dallas to Minneapolis to Charlotte. So we are all calling on, we are entering the debate as people who work, people who have jobs, people who come from communities of color. We're entering this Federal Reserve debate on monetary policy that has heretofore where we've been left out. And what we're calling on in this debate is for the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates low. The Federal Reserve, right, there are many in the Federal Reserve right now who are calling for interest rates to go up as soon as this summer. In Texas, where the black unemployment rate is 9.5% and wages have gone down, we are not a few short months away from a recovery that would justify a raise in interest rates. So that's what we're calling on the Federal Reserve to do. As they have this debate, we are telling them we are not going to achieve an economic recovery by June that includes all communities. So we need to keep interest rates low beyond June until wages begin to rise with productivity.
And please, can you tell me, why should our listeners care about this report?
So I think anyone who cares about fairness needs to think about who is making the biggest decisions in the economy and what are they basing that decision on. So the Federal Reserve is now the biggest economic policymaker in the United States. They're more important than the president, more important than the governor, more important than any representative that you elect. And most of us don't know who the members of the Federal Reserve are and how they work. So your listeners should care about Federal Reserve policy just because they have the most influence on your jobs and your paycheck. And they should care about this report because the Federal Reserve can choose one of two options. They can choose to decide that the economy is fine the way it is, and unemployment should stay high, and they will raise interest rates, and these racial disparities will persist. Or they can choose to keep interest rates low, let the labor market tighten, let unemployment drop, and let these racial disparities shrink.
Mr. Sebastian, we appreciate your time today and speaking with us on this important issue. We have been speaking with the Center for Popularity Democracy spokesperson, Sean Sebastian. Thanks so much.
Attorneys for the state of Texas say the federal government jumped the gun on starting President Obama's controversial executive order on immigration, then misled a federal judge about it. Yesterday, they asked a federal court to grant them quick access to more details on what happened. On February 16, a Brownsville-based U.S. district judge temporarily halted the president's executive action on immigration. The first phase of the program, an expanded version of 2012 Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, was set to begin on February 18.
In the request for early discovery filed Thursday, the state's attorney argued that in discussions with the court leading up to the decision, the Obama administration said it would not begin accepting applications for the program until February. But an advisory filed on Tuesday by the White House's own attorneys, they stated that between November 24th and February 16th, U.S. Citizens and Immigration Services granted about 100,000 three-year deferred action request. That state argues that the administration misled the court. One local nonprofit is on a mission to get students reading. Friends of Harris County Public Library donates more than 5,000 books to students at a Southeast Houston school. KPFD Local News reporter Harry Von Bakel has a story.
This is a very exciting day. This is our first ever Literacy Day. We are partnering with Cristo Rey Jesuit High School as our first education partner, and we're donating over 6,400 books. Fiction, nonfiction, English, Spanish, easy readers, all kinds of levels of kids' books. And when we say kids, we mean from baby up through high school.
Friends of the Houston Public Library Board President Jen Johnson is thrilled to donate more than 6,000 books to the students of Houston's Cristo Rey Jesuit College Preparatory School. Senior Samina Dunbar is grateful for the generous gift.
Giving thanks to the Friends of Houston Public Library for donating so many books for our Literacy Day for our school. And so that's why I'm here, to spread the word and kind of just tell them how much appreciative we are.
Dunbar says reading gives her an escape from daily problems.
Getting away from stress, especially for being a senior and like having issues at home. Like reading just takes me away from that. And it's a way for me to learn different things about different cultures. And it's just a way for me to get away. Get away from my world, enter into the world of the book. And I can't even describe how awesome, like just thinking about it, it makes me feel.
Dunbar says her school receives many donations, but the students must work at the school or one of the school's partners to earn tuition.
Most of our books are donated. We're a school where we usually work to pay our tuition, and it's mostly for low-income schools, and most of our money is from raising monies and galas and things like that. And so, yeah, so this is like a huge deal because we do have a library, but these books are literally for our students to take home.
Another senior student, Candace Gwen, says many students at our school come from low-income families who hardly have any books at home.
Many people are illiterate because the lack of books in their homes, and that's a very important thing to have. Having books in homes, and you're able to encourage your kids to start reading, and they are able to learn new words and vocabulary, and they would be able to understand things in school and move on to their own interests.
Gwen says through readings, he's able to learn about other cultures and learn new words.
If you read a lot, you can expand your vocabulary and your understanding, and it's just amazing how you can enjoy reading as well.
She also says education can bring you further in life.
Education is very key to ending the cycle of poverty, and if I know how to read, I can do anything with my life.
Cristo Rey School President Paul Pozzoli says the gift by the Friends of the Houston Public Library will give all his 490 students a variety of books from which to choose.
This is a great day for Cristo Rey Jesuit High School because many of our students can't afford to go out and buy a Kindle or to go out and buy books at the local bookstore. So it's a great day for them to start getting their own collection of books at their home.
Pozzoli says they will share the books with a neighboring elementary school.
I think every student will probably get about 5 books, and then family members will get books, and we want books for our local community too.
Johnson says they started with Cristo Rey because one of their staff members knows the school, but this is just a starting point.
We want to replicate this event. We just started here because we knew them, and we know that Cristo Rey Jesuit High School serves a very low-income population. They give a private school education to low-income students.
Johnson says reading is important for students of all ages. She says learning to read and continuing to read makes a huge difference.
There, studies show that there's a big correlation between lack of reading ability and incarceration and being on welfare. And so we just feel like early literacy is important and continuing to support literacy, not just up until third grade, but clearly up through high school and beyond. I mean, these kids are still hungry for books.
Johnson says he expects to provide many more students with real books.
And so being able to choose your own reading material, being able to pick out what you like, reading what you like, putting it down if you don't like it anymore, reading like a real reader is very, very important. And we want to keep fostering that.
Friends of the Houston Public Library always welcome your help. You can donate books or your time. Their warehouse at 6510 West Little York Road is open every weekday, except Thursday. For some information, you may visit their website, friendsofhpl.org. It's Friends of Houston Public Library. Also, the Friends of Houston Public Library have been collecting and selling books to support the Houston Public Library since 1953, but this mask giveaway is a new venture.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Harry, for that report. Well, coming up on KPFT Local News, it's great. If you like great live music, well, stay tuned. We'll tell you where you can find it this weekend. But first, it's 416.
Now, a traffic update from the KPFT Traffic Center.
Okay. On the Gulf Freeway traveling outbound at FM 1959 Dixie Farm Road, there's an accident. Three vehicles involved, taking up three main lanes. Again, on the Gulf Freeway traveling outbound at Wayside and US 90 alternate. There we go. There's an accident. Two vehicles involved, taking up all of the main lanes. On the South Loop traveling eastbound at Woodridge, there's an accident. Two vehicles involved, taking up two main lanes. On State Highway 225 traveling westbound at Ritchie Street, there's a hazmat spill which has caused an accident. One vehicle involved, taking up one main lane. At Cullen Boulevard at Pedersen Drive, there's an accident. On Briar Forest Drive at South State Highway 6, there's a major accident. And at the West Loop South at Post Oak Boulevard, there's a major accident there as well. Now back to you, Lane and Harry, in the studio.
Thank you, Roxy. It is now 4:17. You're listening to KPFT Local News.
And my name is Harry Van Bekel, in for Marlo Blue. It's time for our segment Climate Change, where we bring you news about the world we all share. Alternative energy takes the top spot in this week's update, for a number of recent breakthroughs show promise of commercial viability. From wastewater treatment to affordable hydrogen fuel cells to better ways of turning waste heat into electricity. Joining us now live in the studio for more on this is KPFT owns Mike DeLeonardis. Welcome, Mike.
How you doing, Herring? How you doing?
I'm fine. Let's go down the list. Energy from wastewater treatment. Tell us about it.
Before I do, I just want to make one quick soundbite. The Bank of England, just some execs out there said that the fossil fuel industry might be taking a big hit soon. They've been warning insurance companies. Anyway, it's all about energy, isn't it? Anyway, a group in Spain published a study claiming that they can obtain electrical energy and hydrogen with a water treatment process that uses bacteria to produce electricity when they consume organic material. So it not only reduces the amount of energy needed to treat wastewater, but converts the chemical energy in the organic contaminants into hydrogen. And you can call it microbial electrolysis. And all electrolysis is splitting hydrogen off of molecules, and they claim that there's high hydrogen production and energy intensity, and that's the basis for potential industrial and development. So, that's a pretty good thumbs up for that. So just imagine, treating scum, nasty wastewater and getting hydrogen out of it, plus electricity.
What about hydrogen fuel cells?
Good segue into that. Yeah. Two studies were published this week, one out of Rice University here in the good old Petro Metro and one out of Case Western Reserve University. And they both claim to have developed a non-metal catalyst comparable to platinum for hydrogen fuel cells. Now, on top of that, they're more durable, these non-metal catalysts. And this is a big deal because platinum is very expensive and it's very rare. There's not enough of this stuff to go around. So what this means is that hydrogen fuel cells will become much cheaper and so much more ubiquitous because they'll be able to be able, you know, it's mass production. And without going into great details, this is what was done. They used strips of graphene doped with nitrogen and boron over at Rice. Or at Case Western Reserve, they layered some sheets of graphene doped with nitrogen lined with some carbon nanotubes insulated with carbon black. And, you know, okay, that's a little minutia there, but all of this means that it's a big step toward production, mass production on an industrial scale. It's a really big deal. And I guess you think about these little things like nitrogen and boron, they stick it there to grab the hydrogen, store it for later use.
And what about waste, converting waste heat into electricity?
Yeah. And another thumbs up for Houston. A group out of University of Houston has created a new thermoelectric material for generating electric power from waste heat that's more efficient and has higher power output than anything currently available. And these materials produce electricity by taking advantage of flow of current from warmer to cooler areas, which in this case is it's electric. Electrons. So voila, you got electricity. And this can be used with waste heat applications like tailpipes or smokestacks, or even convert thermal solar energy into electricity. So imagine using the heat from your car's exhaust to power your car's electrical system. Really cool stuff.
That is good. So anything more to add, Mike?
Yeah. A multinational study out of Sweden earlier this week claims to have made a major step forward in producing solar fuel using artificial photosynthesis. And you think, what is this? Okay, well, the key to doing this is building a molecule where the conversion of light to chemical energy happens so fast that no energy is lost as heat, so that all the energy in light is stored in the molecule as chemical energy. Another big deal. And just imagine this, okay? Think of the electronics revolution that happened over the past 20 years, you know, computers, PCs, cell phones, all this sticking this stuff together. Think about sticking this with hydrogen fuel cells. You've got, in a sense, grabbing the light of the sun and storing it into electricity to be portable. I mean,
that's really a revolution.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Mike DeRonardis, for your expertise today. And we hope to see you again next week.
Always a pleasure. Now you can wipe that smirk off your face after that expertise comment. Thank you very much, Harry. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Well, just in time for spring break, Southwest Airlines launches its international service this weekend. The first international flight taking off from Hobby Airport will be between Houston and Aruba tomorrow. A plane is set to arrive in Houston from Aruba at 4:30 p.m. on Saturday.
That's despite the fact that Hobby's international terminal, being paid for mostly by Southwest, is still under construction and isn't slated to open until later this year. The service is possible because Aruba is a federal pre-clearance location, which means U.S. border agents living aboard can process travelers through customs before they arrive in the U.S.
In October, Southwest plans to offer flights to destinations in Mexico and Central America. It has applications pending with the U.S. Department of Transportation for approval of nonstop service between Hobby and four destinations in Mexico: Cancun, Mexico City, Puerto Vallarta, and San Jose del Cabo. It also requested approval for flights from to San Jose, Costa Rica, and Belize City, sorry about that, Tucker.
Okay. Well, we are going to Roxy for a quick look at traffic and see how your commute is going on Friday afternoon in Houston City.
Now, a traffic update from the KPFT Traffic Center.
Okay. On the Gulf Freeway, traveling outbound before Dixie Farm Road, there's an accident. Three vehicles involved taking up three main lanes. Again, on the Gulf Freeway, again, traveling outbound at Wayside, there is an accident. Two vehicles involved taking up all of the main lanes. On the North Loop, traveling westbound at the North Freeway, there's an accident. Two vehicles involved taking up one main lane and one shoulder lane. On the South Loop, traveling eastbound at Woodridge, there's an accident. Two vehicles involved taking up two main lanes. On State Highway 225, traveling westbound at Ritchie Street, there's a hazmat spill, which has caused an accident. One vehicle involved taking up one road lane. On El Dorado Boulevard, there is a major accident. On Old Spanish Trail, there's another major accident. At Jefferson at Fannin Street, there's a major accident there as well. And finally, at Main Street at Wheeler, there's a major accident. So be prepared for all of that. And now back to you, Harry and Lane, in the studio.
Thank you, Roxy, for that report. It's now 4:26. You're listening to KPFT Local News at 4. My name is Gerry van Bekel, in for Marlo Blue.
And I'm Lane Closure. Thanks for staying with us. New data released by the General Social Survey indicates support for a right of same-sex couples to marry has increased 8% in the past 2 years and jumped 45 points since the question was first asked back in 1988, when only 11% of Americans said they agreed with the idea.
The survey now finds that only one-third of Americans are opposed to gay marriage. The survey found that 56% of Americans now agree that gay and lesbian couples should have the right to get married, up from 48% in 2012. The largest shift in support since 2012 has come among Republicans. Their support for marriage rights for same-sex couples have jumped 14 percentage points since 2012 to 45%. The survey also indicates that at least half of Americans in all age groups, except those aged 65 and older, now favor legal same-sex marriage.
Now, if you want to hear some incredible all-original music, Houston is the place to be this weekend. South by Due East 2015, Guy Schwartz and our own Marlo Blues Guerrilla Marketing Experiment, Movie Shoot and Free Indie Music Festival will take place at Last Concert Cafe, and that starts tonight, this Friday, March 6th through Sunday, May 8th.
South by Due East organizer Schwartz says the festival is keeping to its 13-year tradition of bringing local music into the spotlight.
South by Due East is actually several different things at the same time. Primarily, I've invited and accepted submissions online for 50 or 60 local original musical artists to come and record for our video cameras and our multi-track recorders to make episodes of our South by Due East television show for cable access and internet consumption. At the same time, we invite the public to come and have a free admission so that there is an audience for the performers to feed off of, and it makes for a great little indie music festival as well as a cool hang and networking place. Since the artists only play a 20-minute set for our cameras, there are a lot of musicians on the campus at any given moment. And then, of course, it's also the name of our television show, some of the radio shows we do for KPFT and for the web, and all of the web clips that we do to help promote the artists and the Houston music scene.
There will be plenty of cameras and audio equipment recording of all action both on stage and off, but Lucky 13 is bringing some noticeable changes to this year's festival.
There's a bunch of things new at South by Due East this year. First of all, there's a lot of new artists we haven't had a chance to have on our television show before, like Shelley King, Hayden Jones, Craig Kinsey, but there's really a whole bunch of them. Another new thing is our affiliation with KPFT, FM 90. We're going to have KPFT volunteers out there helping us liaison with the musicians and the audience members / extras, and live performances from the event and recorded performances from last year's event will be broadcast and webcast on the KPFT HD3 channel.